south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander...
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started.
Hey, you know, we talk about the happiness factor here in Latin America, and certainly people are happy. It exists. Even with poor folks living in shacks and barefoot kids on the street, they're smiling and happy most of the time. All right, so Latin Americans get big points for happiness, but what about honesty? Now, that's a different story altogether. I'll tell you, after being down here a couple of decades now, I discovered that most Latin Americans generally tell you what you want to hear because they're not used to confrontation. Well, that's not to say they don't fight amongst each other. You know, people do. Families do, etc. Who doesn't? But when it comes to dealing with extranjeros, that's strangers or gringos or Europeans or people from another country, Latinos have a way of dealing and negotiating with you that often is not what it turned out to be when you first started up the discussion. For example, many times I've mentioned that site OLX.com. That's the Craigslist throughout Latin America, and nearly every Latin country has its own. But man, I'll tell you, the honesty factor is just not there. Need proof? Just the other day, I was on OLX.com looking to buy myself a table saw. Yeah, I got myself involved in another project. I promised myself I was done with all that, but sometimes you like to do certain things yourself instead of hiring people, that is, if you got the skills, because you think or you know you can do it better. And as for me, every time I've owned a house or I stayed one place for more than a year or so, I started collecting tools because I hate borrowing tools, and I hate having the wrong tool for the wrong purpose. And I'll tell you, if you go on OLX.com, you'll find every single tool imaginable. In fact, you'll find just about anything, including exercise equipment, kitchen appliances, cars, gardening stuff, even dogs, cats, snakes, and driveway chickens. You name the item or product, they've got it in spades. All right, so the other day I'm on OLX.com, and I see a really nice DeWalt table saw. I'm talking about a contractor's grade saw that you could buy on Amazon new for around $500 or so. But I'm not looking for anything new. I mean, that's why you go on OLX.com. It's all about selling and buying used stuff. And right now I'm looking to get a nice saw. Of course, these things weigh a ton. I'm thinking maybe 50 pounds. That means if you go the usual route of ordering it on Amazon, it gets sent to your Miami mailbox, they forward it to your Latin country, and you got to pay by the pound. Let's say you pay $5 a pound, you're looking at $250, totally out of the question. Besides that, you pay duties on anything over $200. Remember recent past shows where I've mentioned that? So in order to get around that, either you screw around with the receipts and try to jimmy with that using Photoshop, or you're going to pay some import taxes. So really, it's not feasible at all to buy something big like a table saw from Amazon and having it shipped down. You're much better off buying something slightly used on OLX.com, because even if the price seems a little high, you're not paying the shipping and the taxes, etc. Now, it's true. If you go to one of the local hardware stores, yeah, they've got big hardware stores throughout Latin America, especially in the large cities, you'll probably find the saw you're looking for, or practically anything you're looking for that matter. But if it's a real heavy piece, it's bound to be half again as much than what you'd pay for a new one on Amazon, because inevitably, somewhere along the way, the hardware store had to pay taxes, shipping, and make a profit, too. But do note, when it comes to people selling electronics and appliances on OLX.com, as well as tools, there's a good percentage of people selling stuff there who bought it originally in the States when they were on a trip or a visit, and they packed it up and brought it on back with them when they flew back to their home country. Because frequent flyers know, even frequent Latino flyers, that you can package up pretty much anything that's less than 60 pounds and bring it through as a piece of stowed luggage for something like $50 to $100. And if you're allowed one stowed bag, sometimes what you bought up in the States will be that stowed bag. So you pay nothing to bring it back. And then when you land and get your baggage, you usually can go straight through customs without paying any duty on it, because the custom guys at the airport do cut you some slack if you're only bringing one box that's got some new stuff in it. However, if you bring in more than one or two boxes at a time, they're liable to nail you. Yep, they'll let one box slide, even if what's in it is new, and in the box like a brand new TV, which I don't recommend. I always say, why take chances? If you buy something and the state's brand new and you're going to bring it down, like a TV, stereo, amplifier, microwave, whatever, I suggest you take it apart, get rid of all of the original plastic bags, repackage it in another box, tape it up like an amateur, and if they ask any questions, just tell them it's used. Because used things almost always get through the airport customs without paying duty. That is, if you're bringing it through as a piece of luggage with you as you arrive. I've personally done that with drills, saws, guitars, amplifiers, big, heavy stuff I've packed in boxes as stowed luggage, and I've never had any problem. All right, but back to the honesty factor we originally started with. So I'm on OLX.com. I find a really terrific saw. It's $550 new on Amazon. Totally out of the question for me because the shipping and possible duties will bring it up to almost a grand. No way. I'm not a professional contractor or anything. I just want something around that I can use on occasion. I don't need a brand new table saw, and I don't want to pay a grand for it either. Like expat Eddie always says, if you're going to cut your fingers off or put your eye out, do it with your own tools. Which begs the question, why do moms always say, don't do that, you'll put your eye out? I kind of think if your eye got whacked, it would go in, not out. All right, so I found this cool saw with a stand. The seller posted 4 or 5 pictures on OLX.com. It's obviously used, but in decent shape. Oh, you can't ever tell till you see it in person. So I shoot him a chat message, you know, OLX.com. It lets you chat back and forth with the seller. And I said, how much? Now remember, all this is going down in Spanish. We're talking OLX.com. It's a Spanish language version of Craigslist. Now, that's another thing I don't get about Latinos. They'll put something up on OLX.com or in the classified news ads, and they won't put a price. Or they'll put a price that obviously doesn't make sense, like $2 or $0. I'd say that occurs about half the time, and it drives us gringos and expats completely nuts. Why don't they just put down a starting price? Because you have to start somewhere, and you know, everything's negotiable. And it's especially annoying when they do it with cars and houses. Come on, would you do that? Put an ad for a house or a car and not include the price? Isn't that the basic rule for selling stuff? It should never be necessary that you have to waste your time asking. Duh. And you wonder why people call it the third world. Well, I'd say at least half the Latinos posting stuff for sale don't get it. And what's worse, when they post pictures on OLX.com, I'd say about every fourth or fifth photo is useless. Often shifted 90, even 180 degrees from the horizontal. That means you have to tip your head sideways or upside down to get the picture. But then again, when you see a photo like that, you know what kind of guy you're dealing with. So anyway, I text this Latino guy about that saw. He shoots back a price of $600. Yeah, right. $100 more than a brand new one on Amazon. Of course, along with the $600, he put the word negociable, negotiable. Yeah, like you really have to say that. So then how did I respond? Well, I went on Amazon and I copied a few of the pages that had those saws for sale for around $500 or so. I wanted to give him a few links so he'd have some proof. And I said to him, look, I can get a brand new one on Amazon for $100 cheaper than your used one. I said, here's the proof. How low will you go? Then he said 500 and I said 300 and he said, come on over and look at it. And that's where we are right now. I haven't really seen it yet, but I can tell you this, it's not going to be in perfect condition. Latinos are not into maintenance or doing a makeover on things they plan to sell. They usually put them online with the pictures. Warts, grime, grunge, cucarachas, and all. And the real funny thing is they always put the condition of the item as new, like new, little used, that's poco uso, or nitido. And of course, new means it's never been used, right? At least it does to me. Still in the box or in original wrapping. And like new, what does that mean to you? Out of the box and maybe used just a couple of times, right? And then there's that all-important catch-all phrase for the condition of anything. Nitido, that's N-I-T-D-O, nitido, which technically means used but very well taken care of. But in reality, it could mean anything from used and well taken care of to a complete piece of junk. The fact is, getting back to the original point, Latinos are not as honest or trustworthy as gringos. That comes from my own experience and the dozens and dozens of stories I've heard from gringos and expats. Now, I'm not saying that some gringos and expats or some North Americans don't pull exactly the same thing. Look, it's a human foible that we all somehow think our possessions are worth more than they really are, and we think they're in better condition than they really are, too. Look, none of us wants to believe when he buys a new car that it instantly depreciates a couple of thousand bucks in value as soon as you drive it off the lot. We've all heard that, but we don't want to believe it. Oh, we'll believe it when it's somebody else's car, but not our car, right? Oh, and another interesting thing about the honesty factor here in Latin America. If you've got a house or a place where you have a cleaning lady or a gardener or maintenance guy, I guarantee if you're living in that place long enough, a window will break, or a lamp or some dishes or knickknacks will hit the floor, break, and suddenly disappear. Or there might be a brand new telltale paint mark or oil spill in the garage. And when you ask your help about it, chances are, and I've seen this plenty of times myself, they'll all be in denial. No one did it. It was an act of God, an acto de Dios. But someone did it. They're just not talking. And I think I know why that is. For example, if your cleaning lady breaks something and admits to it, their Latino bosses will often take it out of their salary. So naturally, if no one catches them in the act, they go into denial. So the honesty scale is kind of a sliding scale depending on circumstances, which brings us to this email that directly addresses that very thing. This comes from Benny, living down in Panama. He says, "Dear Johnny, some time ago on your podcast, you talked about Latinos who lie and or take advantage of gringos and expats with a straight face. I'm talking specifically about Latinos who hit you with gringo prices, and when you catch them in the act, they give you that innocent, childlike look. Somehow they weren't really trying to rip you off, even though you were standing right there when the customer before you received Latino prices, and then you stepped up and they nailed you with the gringo price." Then Benny says, "That happens to me all the time here in Panama. But luckily, I have been down here 5 years now, and I speak enough Spanish, so they usually can't pull that one on me too often." Then he says, "Johnny, it's interesting to see how honesty and gringo prices do not go hand in hand. In fact, some years ago, The Economist magazine did what they call a European honesty test. Very interesting. They did it by leaving a wallet with a fair amount of cash in it. They also included clear contact details of the owner right inside. They did the same test in practically all the capital cities in Europe, both east and west. The test, of course, was to see how many wallets were returned, and they found that the Scandinavians returned almost all of the wallets, and the Italians and Spaniards returned almost none. Turns out, Johnny, there was a very clear, what you might call, honesty gradient, an imaginary line you could cut right through Europe, dividing it into the north and south, with northern Europeans being much more honest as far as the wallet test. Same thing for Eastern Europe, though in general they were less honest than the Western Europeans." Then he says, "Johnny, by coincidence, not so long ago I found a wallet beside some rubbish bins with around 500 bucks in it and some credit cards. One was from my own Panama bank. So on my next visit to the bank, I told him about it, gave him my phone number, and soon got a call from the owner, a pure-blooded Spanish guy. And his reaction was, number one, to check that the money was still in the wallet. Two, to thank me and say not many people would do what I did. And three, he gave me two bottles of wine as a thank you gift. And after that, I checked his reaction with my Latina secretary and asked her what she would have done. She was dead honest, all right, considering we're talking about honesty and lack of it here. She said if I would have found it, regalo de Dios, meaning she'd look at it like a gift from God. In other words, in that case, it would never get back to the owner. Well, maybe, minus the dough. Now, Johnny, I've done some thinking about this thing. I believe there are several degrees of dishonesty, depending on the moment when temptation to be dishonest or not arises. For example, suppose you're in a variety store and you're buying a shirt. You're looking through the rack and you see some expensive Izod, Guess, or Hilfiger shirts going for 50 or 60 bucks a piece. Then suddenly you notice one of those shirts is mismarked at 15 bucks. That's when the moment of temptation arises. You could grab that shirt and take it to the checkout, fully knowing if they catch the error there, you can't be held responsible. Something like that is certainly on the scale of dishonest subterfuge, but nothing like outright stealing or changing the price tags yourself. So then is honesty always the best policy? Well, suppose you get pulled over by a state trooper and he says, "Have you been drinking?" You realize he probably smells it on you. Should you tell him, "Yes, I've had three or four," or should you tell him, "Yes, I had one or two?" In that case, 100% honesty just might not be the best policy. Seems to me, Johnny, the more intelligent you are, the more adept you would be at calculating the possible negative consequences of personal dishonesty. And you'll also be considering if you're highly intelligent. You've got a lot more to lose if you get caught. And that also figures greatly into the mind's calculations. However, if you put Americans in a situation where they don't like their job, as you spelled out in a previous podcast, 60 to 80% of Americans don't. I'd say most of those wouldn't mind gouging or getting revenge on their employer if they could get away with it. But as for ripping off customers themselves, I don't think most Americans would go for that. However, when you're a gringo in Latin America, you gotta watch out because you will get gouged for gringo prices. It's one of the national pastimes here in Panama. Even though the people here are friendlier, happier, and seem, by all accounts, to like their jobs. That's my story, Johnny. Signed, Panama Benny. Well, thanks for that, Panama Ben. You know, I have to agree with most of what you're saying there. On occasion, I get nailed for gringo prices, too, when I catch them and call them out. They never seem to be embarrassed or ashamed. It's as if they're playing a game with you. They'll just give you a giggle and a little smile that seems to say, "Oops, you caught me, gringo. Can't blame a guy for trying." Though think about if the shoe was on the other foot. Suppose you're a businessman up in Cleveland. A client walks in, asks for a toaster, and you just double or triple the price on him. Well, I don't think if down the line he figures it out, and he comes back in and points the finger at you, you're going to be able to smile and say, "Well, you can't blame a guy for trying." Needless to say, things will get serious. There won't be any laughs. Oh, and by the way, I mentioned I've been on OLX.com looking at saws, right? Well, I also was scrolling through the tools, household items, and furniture at olx.com.gt for Guatemala. And I came across the site where a guy's selling shipping containers. Yep, maritime shipping containers. He's got 20, 40, and 45-foot containers for sale at, get this, $1,000 a crack. And it says here, too, he'll deliver, though I don't think they'll deliver to Jersey or Cleveland. Anyway, he's got plenty of pictures up there. And he says he's got plenty of empty containers available immediately, both on the Pacific port side of Guatemala and the Atlantic or Caribbean side. So why am I mentioning this? Well, because, you know, you can always modify those things and make offices, houses, garages, storage units, even restaurants and Airbnbs out of them. Your options are practically unlimited because you can stack those things up and move them around like Lego blocks. And there are plenty of construction outfits and contractors that are used to working with those things. They're no longer the oddball, do-it-yourself, cheap housing option you once only saw in Mother Jones or Popular Mechanics magazine. In fact, container buildings are beyond being a cult now. They've got hundreds of websites devoted to them and glossy monthly magazines you can buy at the newsstand or in the supermarket. Just thought I'd bring it up since I do get emails mentioning the container thing because Latin America is a perfect place to get creative with them. Though there are two things you have to keep in mind. Number one, you never want to have any part of that container in the direct sun because they're metal and the sun is penetrating here in Latin America. If it catches just the tiniest amount of sun, you'll fry, and if you have AC, it'll never turn off. Second big tip, always plan to have a roof over your container. Let that take the sun. Nothing fancy, it doesn't have to be connected to the container at all. It's just that if you don't have a roof, when it rains, the noise will be deafening. Just think about what it sounds like when you're in your car and a downpour comes. Anyway, if you're interested, just send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com, and I'll hook you up with the link to this company that sells containers for $1,000 a pop in Guatemala. Oh, and it seems every country in Latin America that borders the Atlantic, the Caribbean, or the Pacific has a few companies that'll sell you empty, used containers. You can check them out for yourself by going to olx.com. Whatever country you're interested in. For example, if it's Guatemala, it's olx.com.gt. GT being the abbreviation for Guatemala. All right, changing gears again. Let's talk about money. Real money, like gold and crypto, Bitcoin and such, versus fake money. You know, funny money, like the US dollar. I know you're well aware that every government in the world would like to kill Bitcoin and the cryptocurrencies because they don't get their cut. And the banks absolutely hate them too because they don't get their cut. You know, every wire transfer costs from $40 to $100, depending on which countries you're sending it back and forth to, and the banks in the U.S. always get a piece. We're talking about the New York intermediary banks, who are part of the SWIFT system. On top of that, you have to play the waiting game. It takes 2, 3, even 4 days to get your money transferred. Then there's those know-your-customer laws. Where'd the money come from? What's it being used for? Who's it going to? And on and on. And these days, if your money's in the bank, it's not necessarily yours. And even if it's in your hand or pocket or purse, the U.S. government can take it. And they're doing more and more of that lately. Why? Well, one of the big reasons is because the government's broke. It's technically bankrupt. And also remember that state troopers, the DEA, sheriffs, and local police, if they confiscate money, their department gets to keep a piece of it. As screwed up as that may sound, that's the law. Now, the headline on this article, just came out a week or so ago, is DEA seizes woman's bag of cash. It was her dad's life savings. It starts by saying, the DEA, who confiscated a Pennsylvanian man's life savings, will not return it, even though he's neither accused nor suspected of a crime. He was just a guy who kept his money in a box rather than in a bank. What the DEA did was legal. It's called civil asset forfeiture. This is how agents seized $82,373 belonging to 79-year-old Terry Rollin of Pittsburgh, and why he and his daughter are now suing the feds to get the money back. The rest of the story is this. For many years, Rollin, a retired railroad engineer, socked away his money in cash in his basement, just like his parents always did. His parents, having been through the Great Depression, were suspect of banks, he said. And this was just a habit that carried through from his father to him, says Rebecca Brown, Rollin's daughter. So, last year, Mr. Rollin moved out of his family home into an apartment. He didn't feel comfortable with that much cash lying around, so he asked his daughter, who was visiting him in August, to deposit the cash in a joint account. His daughter said, between my grandparents and my father, they'd set aside a bit over $80,000. We were going to utilize the money to have my dad receive some dental care that he was in dire need of, and also to do some of his truck repairs. She said it all went downhill when she decided she didn't have time to go to the bank in Pittsburgh before catching a Monday morning flight to Boston. She lives in Lowell, Massachusetts. She said she checked online to confirm that she could carry that much cash on a domestic commercial flight. Yes, the airline said it was legal, but it could raise eyebrows, and it did. What happened next was both unfair and unconstitutional, according to the Institute of Justice, an outfit that filed the lawsuit for her and him against the DEA and TSA. Now, the TSA officers at Pittsburgh International Airport pulled her aside so that a state trooper could question her about the cash. She said, the trooper came and asked me a bunch of questions, like, what are you doing with the money? Where are you taking it? Where did it come from? Eventually, the police let her proceed to the gate with her carry-on bag full of cash. But later, that same trooper and a DEA agent stopped her before she could board the flight. The agent questioned Brown and asked her to dial up her father, get him on the phone. So I dialed my father, she said, who was awakened and quite confused and upset. But he answered all the questions. Still, the DEA agent was not satisfied. Then he turned around and said, your answers don't match. I'm seizing the cash. Turns out I was the last person on the plane with everyone staring at me. That was August 26, 2019. A month and a half later, in mid-October, the DEA informed Brown and Rollin that the agency would be permanently seizing the cash under its asset forfeiture program. Now, this is how the DEA describes the asset forfeiture program on its own website. Quote, the asset forfeiture is a tool in our country's battle against drug abuse, helping to shut down pill mills and stop rogue doctors and pharmacists as well as dealers. Forfeiture, particularly civil forfeiture, is a very effective tool against drug crimes committed for profit. Now, the sneaky thing is, on the DEA's part, is that neither Rollin nor Brown are suspected of being drug dealers or having anything to do with drugs at all. However, in civil forfeiture cases, the DEA makes a claim against the money itself, not the people carrying it, not the purported owners. So the whole thing is a technicality. A criminal case and conviction aren't required to take the money. After all, the money's not human. It can't defend itself. So in the end, it's a catch-22 because they'll take the money even though no one's been charged with a crime. It's the same type of confiscation that happens every day with highway patrol stops. Then it says, apparently, when you board a plane, the DEA assumes that you're giving up your constitutional rights, but that's a false assumption. As it turns out, flying with any amount of cash is completely legal. But once again, we see government agents treating American citizens like criminals. Unfortunately, today, the government considers certain amounts of cash as suspicious. By the way, you know, when you fill out that boarding or landing card, they always ask you if you have more than $10,000 in cash or negotiable instruments. If you have more than $10,000 on you and check the box that says yes, you are following their rules. And though they can ask you questions, you're not hiding anything or committing any crime. You check the box as required, filled out the form, and thus everything should be legal. But according to the DEA, just having over $10,000 is suspicious activity. And of course, you must know by now that if your bills are not new and squeaky clean, they all have cocaine residue on them. That is the present state of all large denomination U.S. bills. Speaking of contamination, here's another reason cryptocurrencies like Bitcoin are looking oh so much better for transactions in the future. Listen to this. According to a Beijing, China news feed that came out just yesterday, the Chinese government is disinfecting and isolating used yuan banknotes as part of their efforts to stop the coronavirus. It's the virus in the news these days that appears to have killed more people than they're telling us. It says Chinese banks have been ordered to use ultraviolet light and high temperatures to disinfect yuan bills and then seal and store the cash for 7 to 14 days before circulating it again, with the quarantine period depending on the severity of the outbreak in the particular region. According to the deputy governor of China's central bank, as of Saturday, February 15th, banks have been required to issue all new banknotes. Meanwhile, the Chinese people are not trusting their government or the banknotes, preferring mobile payments and crypto payments over cash. I mean, really, who would have thunk that a virus would push the case for cryptocurrency? But, you know, it's logical. Cryptos are virtual. You can't touch or see them. All right, we're getting towards the end of the show now, so I won't have time to tell you some late-breaking news in the continuing saga of our friend Expat Eddie. He hasn't been around for a while, but he's recently surfaced with some rather ugly personal news. We'll spill it for you here on the next show because we talk about the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, right? Oh, and don't forget to pick up my newly edited and revised Latin American healthcare report. You'll find it at my new website, expatplanb.com. Oh, and in the next week, I'll be posting the dates for my upcoming Expat Insider Seminar. It'll kick off this summer, somewhere around July 10th. So stay tuned. More details to come at expatplanb.com. You've been listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America. If you need some help with your own Plan B, we can schedule a one-on-one phone or Skype consult. Just send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want to get on the waiting list for my next week-long Expat Insider Seminar in Central America, where you're guaranteed to get a 2 to 5 year head start on your Plan B, send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. Nos vemos.